Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Double Jeopardy Challenge Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On June 17, 2019, the Supreme Court decided Gamble v. United States, a case challenging the validity of the separate sovereign's exception to the Double Jeopardy Clause of the U.S. Constitution's Fifth Amendment. In 2015, Terrence Gamble, who had been previously convicted of second-degree robbery in Alabama state court, pleaded guilty in state court to possessing a firearm in violation of Alabama's law against firearm possession by anyone convicted of a crime of violence. Federal prosecutors thereafter relied on the same facts to charge Gamble with violating the federal statute that forbids convicted felons to possess a firearm. Gamble moved to dismiss the federal charge, arguing that the Double Jeopardy Clause precluded a second conviction for essentially the same offense. The District Court and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit rejected Gamble's argument due to the dual sovereignty or separate sovereigns doctrine, which holds that two offenses are not the same for double jeopardy purposes when pursued by separate sovereigns, in this case, state and federal. The Supreme Court granted cert to determine whether the separate sovereigns doctrine should be overturned. By a vote of 7-2, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the 11th Circuit. Justice Alito delivered the opinion of the court declining to overturn the dual sovereignty doctrine. His majority opinion was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Thomas, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Kavanaugh. Justice Thomas filed a concurring opinion, and dissenting opinions were filed by Justice Gorsuch and Justice Ginsburg. And now, to discuss the case, we have Clark Neely, Vice President for Criminal Justice at the Cato Institute.
Well, thanks for having me on to discuss what is arguably one of the most important and historically venerated protections for criminal defendants, and that is the protection against being prosecuted twice for the same offense. And it doesn't take any real reflection to understand why this would be so important, because, of course, when the government prosecutes a defendant, it's because the government is convinced that the defendant has committed a crime. But we have a constitutionally prescribed mechanism for adjudicating those charges that leaves it to the decision of at least a theoretically neutral decision maker in a jury, specifically is what the Constitution provides will be the decision maker in criminal cases. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Because you have a government that is already convinced of the individual's guilt, but that charge needs to be adjudicated by somebody without a dog in the fight. Now, if we didn't have the double jeopardy provision, you could envision a situation where the government gets to keep coming at the same defendant over and over again if they are unsatisfied with the initial verdict. Person gets tried, acquitted, government remains convinced that the person is guilty, so they get a second bite of the apple, and they get to try the case differently because of the things that they learned the first time during the unsuccessful prosecution. And just allowing the government to continue prosecuting somebody over and over and over again until they are able to obtain a conviction would be intolerable. And so that's the essence of the double jeopardy provision in the Fifth Amendment. The question presented in the Gamble case is whether that provision applies to successive prosecutions by the state, which is who went first in this case, and then the federal government. In other words, if the state and the federal government want to prosecute somebody for the exact same conduct, can they do it successively? And that was the question that was presented in Gamble versus United States. The crime at issue, the underlying crime, is one of the most pedestrian and banal crimes you can imagine and frequently prosecuted in this country, and it is the possession of a firearm by a felon. Mr. Gamble was pulled over during a traffic stop in Alabama. He was found to possess drugs, I believe also a digital scale, and a handgun. And so the state prosecuted him for being a felon in possession, which is a violation of Alabama state law. He pled guilty to that charge and received 12 months prison sentence. For reasons that are not apparent from the briefing or the opinion, the federal government then decided to prosecute Mr. Gamble for the exact same crime under federal law, because there is a parallel federal law, Section 922G, that makes it a federal crime to be a felon in possession of a handgun or a firearm. Sorry. Mr. Gamble made a constitutional objection or a defense and entered a conditional plea of guilty. So what he said was, I don't think it is constitutional for you, federal government, to prosecute me for a crime for which I've already been convicted by the state, but I will enter a conditional plea of guilty provided I can pursue this constitutional argument on double jeopardy grounds in the courts. So that was the posture of the case. The district court accepted the conditional plea and sentenced Mr. Gamble to 46 months in prison. So 4 years as opposed to the 1 year that he got from the state to run concurrently with the state sentence. So an extra 3 years in prison after the federal conviction. The 11th Circuit affirmed, as it was bound to do, because existing Supreme Court precedent permits this, but the Supreme Court granted cert to take a fresh look at the so-called dual sovereigns or separate sovereigns doctrine that has been part of our constitutional jurisprudence for more than 70 years that holds that, in fact, there can be successive prosecutions for the exact same conduct by the state and federal government. It can go state first, or it can go the federal government first. So you can go state, then federal, like in this case, or you can go federal, then state. And you can even do it after an acquittal. So if Mr. Gamble had been acquitted after a jury trial in Alabama state court, according to the separate sovereigns doctrine, still would have been constitutionally permissible for the federal government to then try him for the exact same crime, not in the exact same statute book, of course, because it was a state crime in the state proceeding, but now it's a federal crime in the federal proceeding, see if they can get a conviction in the second prosecution. So that's the question presented to the Supreme Court. Should the court revisit and overturn the dual sovereigns exception to the Fifth Amendment? And in a 7-2 ruling, with an interesting concurrence by Justice Thomas on the issue of precedent or on the subject of precedent, the Supreme Court affirmed the dual sovereigns doctrine and affirmed the conviction. And so the opportunity to take a fresh look at the dual sovereigns doctrine and eliminate it, it was rejected. And it seems very unlikely that the dual sovereigns doctrine will be eliminated from our constitutional jurisprudence. And so I think this important protection, or what was meant to be an important protection for criminal defendants in our system to prevent the government from taking multiple bites of the apple, has, like so many other provisions of the Bill of Rights, been effectively neutered by this decision. And as you can probably tell, it's not one that I agree with. And I think it's no accident that the dual sovereigns exception to the double jeopardy clause has been the subject of sustained and almost uniform criticism in other circles besides the Supreme Court, both in lower courts and in legal academia. But we're stuck with it. So the question, I suppose, at this point is, does the decision seem to be to rest on sound analytical and jurisprudential grounds, or was it more of a stretch? And in my judgment, it was more of a stretch. And I think Justice Gorsuch and Justice Ginsburg, in their separate dissents, have the better of the argument. And I would close by adding that I think it is almost certainly no accident that neither in the government's briefing nor in Justice Alito's majority opinion is there any significant discussion of the historical purpose of the double jeopardy protection in the Fifth Amendment and the impact of this decision and this doctrine on that constitutional protection, because I think this result is flatly contrary to the whole purpose and kind of animating reason for having a double jeopardy protection in the first place. And this pretty well gets it, and that's I think it's unfortunate.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.